Thank you, everyone, for coming, and welcome to the GE Analyst presentation. Today, we will start with Norm Liu. Norm is President and CEO of GE Aviation Services. Then we will have David Joyce, who is the President and CEO of GE Aviation. We do ask that you hold your questions until the end. We'll have plenty of time at the end to cover questions for both businesses. And then always, let me remind you, elements of this presentation are forward-looking and are based upon our best view of the world and our businesses as we see them today. Those elements can change as the world changes. Please interpret them in that light. And please let me introduce Norm Liu.
Can I get the clicker? Morning, everybody. I'm serving as sort of David's warm-up act this morning. Got a pretty simple agenda, a snapshot of GECAS first, then an overview of the aircraft financing industry, and then a bit on the current environment and some of the things we're trying to do initiatives-wise, and then a wrap-up. Look, GE's been in the aircraft financing business for, you know, over 45 years. We think we're, you know, well-positioned within the GE portfolio. We contribute about $1 billion of earnings last year, so we held up pretty well during the downturn, and we hope we add some little bit of added domain expertise into our whole aviation arena and some customer financing support as well. Gone in the GE portfolio, we think we're pretty well positioned in the competitive landscape. We've got a very large existing fleet, very broad international network, which I have a slide on, and a very broad product array, and right now we've got the best funding cost probably in the industry. Also a highly, highly experienced team. You know, we've got folks with customer relations going back decades, and also a technical department that's probably as big as most airlines, because we literally deliver and redeliver, you know, hundreds of planes each year. We have great financial engineers who've done financial restructurings on airlines, and also very, very active capital markets player in terms of selling assets. And look, GE Capital is pretty well known for our risk underwriting capabilities, and we're pretty well known in the industry. When we do something, a lot of other lessors follow, and then we spend a lot of time on process and things like that in terms of managing the fleet and the portfolio mix. I have some slides on that later. And most of the team has been through two, if not three, cycles. So that's a bit on GECAS. You know, we're a large-scale player. You know, scale helps when you're buying from the manufacturers, and when you're, you know, doing financings where you can do a size that the others can't do. It's an advantage as well. But it also gives you the opportunity to build up a big distribution network, at least relative to our industry. We've got 23 offices, soon to be 25, covering the world. I mean, a lot of folks talk about emerging markets, but it's mainly fly-ins from London or places like that. We're a believer that you've got to be really local and have locals calling on, you know, Russians in Russia, China, Chinese folks in China, and Latin American folks in Latin America. And some of these locations, I mean, we've been there 5 to 20 years. There are a couple of new locations that we're going to try out this year, later this year, is Africa. That's the sort of last frontier market for aviation. So we're going to do something in Cape Town to sort of cover the southern cone and East Africa, and then something in West Africa. There, as you see later, we've got some presence there already, but there's so many countries there that may present some opportunity. And, you know, when you're local, you know, customers like it, so better relationships, better information network. I mean, the few folks who've left GECAS over the years, they always, you know, comment on how, boy, we're just not in the flow. And I'm saying, well, sorry, but you know, that's an advantage for us. And then once you build the initial customer relationship, you can do repeat business. So 70-80% of our business is just repeat, and that helps on the speed side. And, you know, so we're a long-term player, so they like the certainty of GECAS being there. But you got to start with that first deal, which takes a little bit longer. But once you get that, it's It's not like renting a car or anything, but it's a little bit cookie cutter. So that's a bit on our distribution network. We definitely have the broadest array of product solutions in our space as well, not only fleet and financing solutions, but we do things like engine leasing. I think probably and what we try to do is once we get, you know, first product in there, we try to cross-sell other products. I think most folks know Wells Fargo is sort of very good at measuring number of products per customer. So we're trying to do something similar. And maybe I can talk from a customer example. China Eastern is a client that we've known for literally decades. And we've got 7 products in with them. We've got about 40 planes, 320s, 737-800s, some RJs through their Shanghai Airlines subsidiary, and a bunch of freighters, 777LRFs, through their China cargo subsidiary. We've recently done some debt for some of their some used 320s. We've been inactive. To put those 40 or so planes, we did some fleet rollovers. And what we did was, and this goes back a ways, I mean, many years ago, they used to have MD-82s and Fokker 100s. We took those out. We sold some to the capital market, some to other airlines. And so that's how you get some value add. And they're also a big engine leasing customer of ours. We've got sort of 35 spare engines for them, and they're a customer of our. We have an engine support pool, so they're a customer of that. And then they're also a customer of our. We have a little used airframe spare parts business. And so that's the sort of, I think that's, we may have 7 products or something with them. That's a little extreme, but that's sort of what we're trying to aspire to, is to cross-sell as best we can. A little bit on our airport activity. We own a company called Avius Solutions, which is a leading airport consulting firm. You know, they're well known in Europe. You know, consulting for BA, Hochtief, you know, Ferrovial, people like that. But we're trying to expand their global footprint. So, you know, govern Mexico, Bahrain, Djibouti. You know, we're trying to get them a little more global, because, you know, clearly, I mean, we're doing this because the more we can help governments and airlines get their infrastructure right, the more planes we can lease. It's as simple as that. The more we understand that space, more we understand our aircraft space. And we've also gotten in a select way into actually investing in airports. We set up with Credit Suisse a global infrastructure fund. Now, it's not just airports, but we have invested in London City down the road, and then Gatwick further down on the road. And from a standing start, it's become one of the best rated private infrastructure funds around. It's really a team that works this, and we're just a co-sponsor here. So this just sort of gives you a flavor of the breadth of our activity. Moving to the air finance industry, I mean, look, it's the airline business is cyclical. There's a whole range of sizes and shapes on the credit side, but I think you have to differentiate the aircraft finance side, because aircraft, I mean, good news, I mean, it's assets. Not only can you kick, but you can move them, you can move them around. But you have to have a distribution that where you're going to place these things. You have to have a big technical department, and if it's a contested deal, those few times that happens, you better have good legal staff. So we've got some of the. It's great to say it's portable, but you have to have a lot of skill base to move these things around, and you know, they're long-lived assets as well. And so we I've got a page on life cycle later on. We sort of say not just managing the PAX life, but some of these planes will go cargo, some of these planes can go part out. So that we've sort of built a full life cycle management capability into our story. Look, this recent downturn, the aircraft, I mean, look, it's gone down a bit, it's recovering now. But it's fared out fairly well when you look to corporate jets or container ships and things like that. And I've been sort of thinking, why is that? Well, first of all, it's just that it's aircraft, but you're really the transportation network of an economy. You all know, many of you who live here in Europe, what happened with the volcano. The place shuts down when you don't have a airlines flying around. And I think governments sort of realize that, so in times of need, they sort of kick in what they can. And I think the other key thing, this is secular for sure, is the whole emerging market thing. And, you know, you have a situation where, okay, if there's 6 billion people in the world, you've got 4 or 5 billion people who want to, I mean, not all of them are going to hop on planes, but you have an increasing percentage of people who who want to travel around the world. I'm Chinese American, so I look at the Chinese tours going around the world. Just going to Taiwan, I mean, the place is packed. Traveling to Southeast Asia, traveling to Europe, I mean, that's just a beginning. Everyone aspires to do that. So I think that's a secular thing that's going on. That's, you know, help the recovery after the 9/11 world, and it's helping the recovery out of today's situation. In terms of the cycle, I mean, we were sort of, estimating that, like, the cycle from that 9/11 phase to 07, you know, might sort of correspond to the 08 financial crisis to maybe 2014, something like that. I mean, this is just a guesstimate. And when you look at that, it's pretty easy to develop a playbook around that. I mean, basically during the down cycle, you finance more, the returns are better, and then you try to buy, like what we did yesterday, some orders from the manufacturers, you know, in the trial, and then you try to place those in the up cycle. You know, down cycle, you've got restructurings and repos and things like that you got to work, so you got to spend a lot of time on that. But then in the up cycle, you focus on selling more to investors and capital markets. So that's, I mean, it's a pretty simple business. Of course, the trick is getting it right, and, you know, that doesn't always happen, but we try to do our best. In terms of the market environment, look, David's going to have some slides on the airline industry, but it's a two-geared recovery. I mean, emerging markets, it's almost V-shape on PAX and the cargo side. I sort of look at, in the emerging markets, you can just take the GDP of a country, multiply it times two, and that's the traffic growth rate, roughly speaking. Developed markets, it's more like you don't get that two times multiplier. You're sort of maybe approaching GDP. But even there, you know, I would say a couple quarters ago, this was still looking tough, but things have picked up there. But it's just a slower, you know, economic situation. Premium, as most folks have seen, premium is coming back, and some merger activity as well. This is a market where, if the emerging markets is driven by organic traffic needs, this is a market that there's needs in terms of replacement lift. You know, there's still thousands of planes that are MD-82s and planes like that. And I think around two-thirds, when I looked at it last, were in the developed market. So so things are looking up in the airline industry. In our sort of leasing space, things are, I characterize as in and transition. Folks, last year was sort of, the media sort of focused on the funding gap. This year, it's a flood of money coming in. I mean, it's not really that dramatic, because last year, XM ECAs filled in the gap. This year, private money's returning. I sort of view the market as balanced. Look, the traditional lessors are facing, not us, but some of the other players are facing some issues, primarily on the funding cost side. You know, if we're at 150 over, they're at, you know, anywhere from 400 to 800. So it's sort of hard to grow when you've got those spreads that you're facing. Some are seeking scale because our industry, they're two large players, and then it sort of falls off to middle-sized players that have assets of, you know, $5 to $8 billion. So that's the traditional marketplace, but in any market, you always have new entrants too, when there's a bit of a window. So what we see are Chinese banks and some Asian players who are looking to long. I mean, they I have a chart later on. They're looking to build their aerospace industry. So this is sort of part and parcel of that. They've got you know, much better funding costs, but right now are moving very methodically. You know, it's a capabilities thing that they've got to build. And then you've got the PE-backed, private equity-backed players. Their headset's more of a, you know, 3-4 year flip, got to time the market right. They've got higher, you know, if you're bank funded, it's sort of a 400 type of spread market. So they've got to, you know, they're trying to get some scale. And then hopefully if the market turns and there's a window there, they can maybe float. So it's competition in terms of financing. I also view it as an opportunity to sell some, I call it starter packages, to these folks, and we've been pretty active there. In terms of aircraft technology, I mean, Dave will have more on this, but just a quick overview. You know, there are a lot of OEMs in the regional jet space, not just Brazilians and Canadians, but now you've got the Russians, you've got the Chinese, you've got the Japanese, so it's getting a little busy there. On the narrow body side, everyone's followed the whole story about potential re-engineering on the Airbus side. We'll see what happens on the Boeing side. And you've got the Canadians and Chinese entering in. When you move up to the 200, 300 seater market, sorry about that. When you move up to the 200, 300 seater market, it's actually, with the 787, it's actually sort of stabilizing. But you've got this long-term product that's sold out for many years. And, you know, that's great for long-range missions. It goes up to 8,000 nautical miles. But you also have an existing product, the 330, that's doing reasonably well. That works for, you know, if you look at the city pairs, I think 80% of them are 2,000 nautical miles, and this thing has a 5,000 nautical mile range. So, you know, with priced properly, these things can work reasonably well. They sort of complement to some extent. Now, when you go up to the 300-plus seater market, less operating, less lessor territory, but you've got the whole 350s, 777 situation, and then the whole 380, 748 discussion. It's a lot going on the product side, but it's sort of years out in many cases. So given that environment, an industry that's recovering with a lot of growth in the emerging markets, a competitive landscape and transition, well, the obvious thing is like, well, let's try to capture some attractive financing volume in the near term, which is one of our actions. Other thing is, you know, we're already pretty active in emerging markets, build it even more. On the aircraft technology side, I sort of see it as an opportunity to restock our narrow-body orders, do some more on the wide-body side, which I'll get into a bit. But then, obviously, you've got to manage what you have, your existing fleet in terms of types, just managing the roll-off, managing your portfolio mix. So let me go into some of those topics. On the financing volume side, I think it's safe to say that returns are, you know, post the financial crisis are probably, you know, 1.5 to 2 times where they used to be. I mean, it used to be 2 times, maybe a few. So it's starting to tighten in, which is why I'm saying, you know, the funding market's more in balance, but they're still, you know, much higher than pre-crisis levels. And where we try to play are the larger deals where we've got some advantage. You know, we do multiple products like this Emirates. We lease a lot of 777s to Emirates, but we recently did a GE90 sale lease back with them as well. And the play here is like, look, we can move very fast because in many cases we already have installed business with these folks, and so we just sort of do amendments to our lease terms. But also we, you know, given our record of delivering on commitments, I think that's a big plus that we try to emphasize today. And you know, Air Berlin, I think we've done like, you know, 13, 14 sale leasebacks because they like relying on us. And so that's how we play there. Emerging markets, we've got about $25 billion of committed assets there, about 40% of our fleet value. And it's over 50% of our net income last year. And the growth rate has been 20% plus, whereas in the developed markets, you know, better or worse, has been sort of flat. So this is where the growth is. 70% of our, it's actually in some of our metal places, it's over 80%, but 70% of our asset sales activity when we're selling to investors or placing metal is in the emerging markets. And the real opportunity is now that we've got those relationships, we can go in and do financing volume. Historically, it's been more financing volume in the developed markets, placing metal in the emerging market. Now, given the emerging market space, we want to go in and try to do financings with customers in the emerging markets. We've got about $11 billion in the so-called BRIC markets. China's the big one with $7 billion, but we're into Russia, India, Brazil. Brazil, we have a couple billion. Russia and India, we have like a billion-ish as well in each place. And But you know, look, the emerging markets, they're different. You can't look at it as one homogenous arena as well. And so there are some areas that are more mature, like China, others that are more pioneering, like Africa. And so China, the way we look at it is, look, they want to grow their own aerospace industry. So these days when I go to China, I spend a certain amount of time with our airline customers, but I spend a lot of time with leasing companies that want to get going there. We've been active selling to China Development Bank and some of the other. We've been by far the most active lessor selling into China, and it goes beyond just, you know, selling them assets and stuff, but maybe we can help service them, build some capability for them, because it's going to happen anyway. We might as well try to help shape these players. And then Comac, which Dave and team's been working quite hard. We've taken a little position on the Asian region, the ARJ21, and we'll see what happens on the C919. But that's all part and parcel. If not, you know, we can just do the normal thing of being an aircraft supplier, which with our new orders and stuff, we're going to work very hard on that. But we think there's some other dimensions to play to sort of add value. I think when you go to Africa, it's the other side of the coin where, look, we actually have a couple $1 billion there in 12 countries, but there's 52 countries. So the headset is like, well, is there opportunity in the other 40 countries? And we're not sort of starting afresh. We've got a big GE network and emphasis there. And so the aim is to try to find, of those 40 countries, what are the other 15 or 20 that we can do business in selectively, build a customer base there, and maybe for the ones that work out well, continue to build. But ultimately, I'm a firm believer, you've got to be there. Versus right now, we fly in from Dubai. It's certainly not ideal. And so you've got to be there locally. In terms of another key thing, you know, when you look at the whole aircraft side, there's an opportunity in the trial. Best time to order is in the trial before the upcycle, opportunities to restock on the narrow body orders. We only have, like, you know, before yesterday, where we ordered 60 Airbus planes and 40 Boeing planes, we only had like 7 planes placed. We had a bigger backlog, but in terms of what was left to place to the customers, we needed to restock. But once you have the orders, okay, these are good things to build, you know, customer base. These are good assets that eventually, once you lease them, you can sell to investors. And these are things that when you have the new stuff, you can do fleet rollover. So if folks have older, new-gen aircraft, maybe we can roll them out and put in some new ones. And if they're old enough, we can maybe take those planes, cargoize them, or part them out later. And so when you have the new order, it gives you sort of different things in your toolkit to play. So that was an important move for us yesterday. Both of those are contracted, by the way. The other thing where we've been primarily a narrow body shop, because, you know, a lot more operator base, a lot more units out there. But I think there is some play for us in wide bodies. We're only 20% versus 36% of the world fleet, and it'll be selective, and we don't have any, we've had 777, everything's placed on our skyline, so this will probably be more sale leasebacks, financings, things like that, of planes like A330s, 787s that are now delivering, and select 777. And look, there's a lot of discussion on re-engineering, impact of residuals, all that. Again, it's sort of like, it's a story, but the reality is these are fairly long-life assets, and we've been through this before, going from stage two to classics to new gen. I look at it as the re-engineering at best is probably 5 years away, so you have 5 years hopefully we'll prep for it. And usually you need enough of the future gen aircraft in the marketplace to have an impact on the current gen planes, and we sort of see, just because the production rates of these current gens have been so high. I think classics peaked at about 2,000 something units. I mean, the current gens will probably peak at 11, maybe even 1,000 plus type of units, maybe 12,000 units. And so that crossover point will be well into the 2020. So again, we've got to be vigilant, but we've got some time to do things, and our basic approach is like, look, manage the whole life cycle. Not many companies can do that. So when it's under 15 years, lease them out to PAX customers, Now, first folks may take it for 10 years. They may renew. Some may stop at 10 years, which means you have to find a secondary customer base for the final 5 years. And then also continually sell assets, you know, partly for capital appreciation purposes, partly for exposure management. And we're by far the most active seller in this space, and we leverage our global network because most of the investors are global. Now I think we've sold over 300 planes the last 5 years. When they get to sort of 15 years, there's a potential for planes to go cargo. So we've been very active in taking classics and converting those into freighters. And so some of our customers, TNT, I think we did about a dozen planes recently. China Post, which is basically the Chinese Postal Service, we've done about a bunch of classics to them, and you would think that they've got, you know, huge opportunities for more, and so we're talking to them. And again, what we do is we leverage our global network, and here there's still a lot of 727s and planes like that flying around, so there is a play there. But this is, you know, we've probably done about 60 conversions in recent years. In terms of part outs, this is sort of when they're 20 plus years old. You know, a few years ago, we bought a company called Memphis Group, which is a leading airframe parts distributor. And what we do is we, you know, when they basically just dismantle the planes and start selling off the airframe parts. And it's probably, I think it's, there's not great data, but it's definitely top, you know, one or two player in that space. So again, we leverage our global network as well. And the engines, which are where there's a big chunk of the value, we work with David's shops in terms of some of the parts, and in terms of other parts, we refurb the engines. We have a large, we're the largest engine leasing company player, so what we do is we refurb them and then rent them out. But, you know, that's how you just keep on getting the cash flow to manage out the assets. So that's a sort of, look, that served us well for some of the existing fleet, and hopefully it'll serve us well for the current gen fleet going out a few years. And then there's there's just the normal day-to-day block and tackling of managing the fleet roller. We spend a lot of, I mean, this is, okay, the announcing the new orders is sort of the fun part, but this is just a lot of block and tackling, a lot of process here. We've kept the aircraft on the ground count below 5 for many, many quarters. I think this quarter we reported 1. And look, that's just processes that we've built over many, many years. It's weekly, it's exhaustive, it's placements, not only placements, but, you know, we have repos that we have to work on, collection accounts, fortunately dwindling as you go into upcycle. And then we're always not just looking at the guys who are a little struggling right now, but we're trying to forecast a little bit, because that's how you know, if you avoid the larger situations, that's how you how you keep that AOG count low. Fortunately, most of the kid is younger, and fortunately, our skyline is pretty well placed out in 10, and, you know, we got some little bit of work to do in 11. On the portfolio mix side, these pie charts sort of show our aircraft types where we're short wides, and that's why we think there's some player average fleet age is about 7 years. On the regional side, we've worked very hard to sort of lower our U.S. Exposure. We used to be 47%, we're now at 32%. We increase our international exposure in, you know, Asia and Europe, so that's gone up, and then increase our Middle Eastern, MAC is Middle East Africa, CIS, and LAC is Latin America and Caribbean. So we've worked hard to increase our exposure there where, you know, that's where all the growth is. And then we've worked hard on the product mix to sort of lower the finance lease exposure over the years. So that in short, is our story. Look, we feel we're pretty well positioned with our network, our products, our team. You know, we've been a consistent earner. Yeah, there's some things going on, the competition and the technology, but we think we can manage through, and we've got a whole bunch of tactics to try to, you know, continue to grow and sustain the franchise. So that's all I had, and I'll turn it over to David.